Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sound Radar, Games Radar's video game music and audio podcast. I'm your host, Sophia Tong, and joining me today is Greg Edmondson, composer for the recently released Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception. Welcome, Greg, and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. I am thrilled to be here.
Now, before we get into it, I also wanted to point out that you are also the composer for the beloved TV show Firefly, which I loved and wish it hadn't been canceled. And are you as outraged as your fans are?
You know, I can talk about that one at length. When I loved Firefly. That was so much fun. And when I first saw the two-hour pilot, I said, I'm working for 10 years. I just knew it. Little did I know it was going to be closer to 10 episodes.
Oh, I know. I was so disappointed. That show could have gone on forever.
You know what Joss did? And you can tell me if we're off subject here.
No, that's fine. We can start off with this.
Joss did something so magnificent, which is he created a show that had 9 main characters, and each one of them was completely different.
Yeah.
So you could have storylines that ran forever without repeating yourself. Yeah. You know, you could just have followed story arcs forever. And Joss knew that that's what he'd done. He knew that he had made something that you could just run with without repeating yourself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for whatever reason, Fox just never liked the show.
Aww.
And they just wanted to be done with it. I have no idea why they even picked it up.
Oh, geez.
You know, much better just to say, Joss, we love you. And this isn't the one for us, but we would love to work together in the future.
Yeah.
They spent $10 million on the pilot, the two-hour pilot.
Oh, wow.
Which was supposed to air first because that's how you introduce the 9 characters to the world at large. Fox said, we're not going to show it. Done. Not going to show it. So they made him write an episode, a 1-hour episode. Well, you can't introduce 9 characters in 1 hour.
Yeah, that's true.
And the 2-hour pilot told you why they were together, why they were all involved. You know, it gave you all the reasons that you needed to make it work. Thank God on DVD, people can watch it in the proper sequence.
I know.
But when it actually aired on TV, it aired out of sequence. It was just the most fun show. And I'll tell you what I think was so special about that show. The casting was just perfection on that show. I could not see anyone else in any of those roles. Mm-hmm. They were just magnificent. And you know, that's one thing that Joss does really interesting. He writes really strong female characters, but they were all strong in different ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
There were no similarities. So yeah. It was just the most clever show, and it just could have gone forever. And I was beside myself when that show was canceled.
Aww.
You know, everybody else kind of finishes before me. I'm the last guy in line. And when I actually got finished with the last episode, I walked into Joss's office and I just cried like
Aww.
A child because I just knew that there was not going to be anything to actually replace how special that show was.
No, definitely. And it's interesting because I think about that show so much, especially when I play StarCraft 2, because it kind of has the same vibe, like the space cowboy theme. But like going back to video games, so you've scored the entire Uncharted series and have been nominated and won multiple awards for your score. And so Uncharted Drake's Fortune was your first video game project. Now, how did you initially get involved?
Well, interestingly enough, it was an offshoot of Firefly. Right about the time Firefly was canceled, they were starting to talk about making Uncharted. And so they were going to do a trailer for E3, which is the big event where everybody shows their latest and greatest,
yeah.
and here's what's coming. And they were putting music up against their trailer, and for whatever reason, they liked one of the tracks from Firefly, and they gave me a call. And in all honesty, I had not done video games. So when they called, I said, listen, you know, I'm honored that you would call me, but you may want to get a guy who does video games because he's going to know better what you need than I do.
Oh.
And I, in essence, kind of tried to talk myself out of the gig. Thank God I was unsuccessful because I finally went down to Naughty Dog in Santa Monica and I met with Amy Hennig. Mm-hmm. And she is such a sweetheart and I so love her. And she's so much fun to work with and so bright. So they talked me into giving it a shot, and I did. Mm-hmm. And I'm so thankful that I did. So Uncharted has kind of taken the place of, and in all honesty, sometimes when you look at Uncharted, there are similarities between Uncharted and Firefly.
Yeah.
Strong female characters, a self-deprecating hero who has a lot, who sometimes does the wrong thing, but in the long run, he's always going to do the right thing.
Yeah, the heart's in the right place. And so game music over the years has kind of grown and evolved where people can't tell the difference anymore between film scores and video game scores. So since you've also worked in the film industry as well as TV, how have those experiences prepped you for video game composing? And what are some of the differences and similarities for you?
There are a number of differences and a number of similarities. I would say the primary difference is that if you're doing a TV show or a film, you pretty much know what your job is because they've already shot it, they've already edited it. So you know exactly what you're looking at, and your job is to fit wherever the cue is supposed to go and to become part of the fabric of telling the story. So you know exactly where the music is going to go. When you start working on a video game, in all honesty, it really doesn't exist yet. It may exist in some extremely rough form, but it bears very little resemblance to what it's ultimately going to look like. So you really need guidance from a creative team. And for me, that creative team is Amy Hennig at Naughty Dog and Jonathan Mayer at Sony. So we sit down early on and we say, well, okay, we're doing this part of the game now. So what do we think the music ought to be? And they guide me and kind of help me figure out what to do. And then I do it. And sometimes I'll just write a cue and we don't even know where it's going to go. We just record it and say, by the time the game is finished, it will probably find a home. And sure enough, it always does. And one of the things that's kind of interesting is sometimes in a video game, music that you wrote for one section of the game actually may end up working as well or better in another section because you really don't know. It's just not finished. Near the end of the game, it changes so drastically day to day because they add new layers of lighting, new layers of everything, new layers of sound design. So it just becomes unrecognizable from what it was when you actually first started writing the music. On the other hand, the similarity, of course, there are similarities in the cutscenes or cinematics. Basically, that's the same as a film scene or a TV show because the performance and the timing is all set. So your job is to become part of the fabric of telling that story. Combat cues, you'd basically just go, okay, well, if it's going to be a combat cue, we kind of know what's going on here. So you just write that kind of music, and that might be the same as you would do for a film, but in some ways it's a little more liberating because you're not locked into a picture. And it's a little more liberating because you're not confined to whatever style seems to be the style du jour, which right now is a lot of ambient music in films and television, and video games actually allow you to write melodies in a big way, which is really kind of fun and a little more liberating. So, you know, everything has its pluses and its minuses, but, you know, how lucky to work in any of those formats and how lucky to have the resources, which you get in a video game. You would never get those resources in television, not anywhere close, nor would you have the time to use them. You know, in television, you're lucky if you get a week to do a score. Over the course of a video game, you may actually start. You wouldn't be working really hard at the beginning, but you may actually work over the course of 2 years writing and then kind of waiting to see what happens and then writing and letting the music change as the video game changes. That's one of the things that's interesting about video games that's very different from film or television. Film or television, you start with a script, and that script basically is going to be your Bible. So you know exactly what you're going to shoot, and you go out and shoot it. If you have 28 days, you have 28 days. You may fall behind schedule, you may do whatever, but you are going to shoot the script that you have. In video games, because they're developed over a longer time frame, sometimes there might be a section of a video game that you thought was terribly interesting, and yet by the time it comes together, you like it less well than you anticipated. But there may be another section that you didn't think was going to be as interesting, and all of a sudden when it starts to come together, you realize it's terribly interesting. So you may say, let's take 20 minutes out of section A, and let's add 20 minutes into section B. Well, what that does is it means the music's going to change. It means that the script needs to be adaptable. The script has to change, and yet it has to change in such a way that the player, when playing the game, doesn't feel like there's anything missing. It just feels like it was always meant to have the arc that it has. So that makes writing the script really tricky, but Amy does such a great job, and the actors sell it. I am just so lucky to be involved in a project that starts with a great script, cast with really great actors, and that makes my job really fun.
And it is really tricky because game music is also an interactive medium and can be a challenge when you compare it to like film and television. So how do you approach that element, like the interactiveness, like going?
You know, in all honesty, I kind of don't, for this reason. I don't implement the music into the game. The Sony team, Jonathan Mayer and all, and his wonderful cast and crew over at SCEA, are responsible for game implementation. So we talk, and he's involved. As I'm writing, he's involved. So they will tell me what we're looking at doing, and I will write it. And if there's an issue that we think is going to hamper implementation, then Jonathan will say so at that point. What if we did this? What if we did that? For the most part, they just let me write music as you would write music. We all know that because, you know, you can't write enough music to actually fill a video game, you're going to maybe write 2 hours, and they're going to have to stretch it over the 10 hours that the player's involved with the game, which means a little bit of deconstruction. So if I were to write a full piece with full brass and full strings and full everything, and the player starts off and there's not a lot of danger, they may start with just the strings or just the low strings and break it up so that the music kind of builds as the player gets into more intense parts of that level. So that's their job. My job is really just to try and write something that's interesting, that stands alone as music.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So in Uncharted 3, Nathan's heading towards this Atlantis of the Sands. And so what was it like working with a different set of instruments? Because the setting is different in this one. Do you have familiarity with these instruments, or did you have to research at all?
Always a little research involved. You know, in number two, we were essentially in Tibet. So as you did research, you saw, I can use these giant Tibetan horns. And we were able to use this beautiful ancient Chinese violin called the Arhu, played wonderfully by Karen Han, who is the star of the Arhu in Los Angeles. You know, you just know that every locale is going to have its different ethnic elements. The Asian culture had a richness in terms of melodic instrumentation that the desert doesn't quite have. But you know what? It kind of makes sense, because the one thing that's really fun about, you know, indigenous music is cultures always find music that makes sense for where they are. So the desert is a little more wild and a little more dry sounding. So we used all the desert flutes and ethnic instruments and the little stringed instruments. And, it's just really fun. It's fun experimenting and finding people who can play those and having, you know, and being able to introduce them into the game. And I really kind of like those things being used more as flavor, like spice, rather than, I'm trying to think of the right way to say it. I'm not trying to make ethnic music. I'm merely trying to use little colors that give it an exotic feel and tuck that into maybe what would be a combat cue or an exploring cue, so that really the orchestra is the primary motivator, but these little colors pop up every now and then, jump out and just say we're not in Kansas anymore.
It works well. And Uncharted 3 is a big soundtrack, 2 discs. And what are some of your favorite tracks, mainly so I can play them for, you know, the listeners?
You know, in all honesty, I'm not really sure.
I know there's a lot.
There's so many that I like for so many different reasons. You know, I mean, yeah. We always have fun with Nate's theme only because people seem to know it and respond to it. There was a cue that was very different from anything I've done called Small Beginnings, which is primarily a nylon string guitar cue with strings, and I think that turned out quite well. I wrote a lot of combat music on this one. And I am so proud of it. It actually turned out really good. It's by far the most sophisticated thing we've ever done. On the other hand, it's different. When we started off, Amy was really, you know, emphatic that even though we were going to be cut from the same piece of cloth in this game, we didn't want it to sound like Uncharted 2. So we wanted it to be big and full. And one thing we did on this, we, you know, the first two were recorded in San Francisco. This time we recorded at Abbey Road in London.
These themes evolved over the course of the three games, and like, do you work closely with the writers to kind of go over the themes, or do you just kind of run with it?
I think we kind of take it, and I think we also look at the band we're going to have. We on Uncharted 1, we had a smaller orchestra. Uncharted 2, we had about 80 guys, so the sound changed just automatically because of the orchestra. Instead of having three horns, you now had eight. And when we went to London, we used our eight horns again, but we just had this really great brass section, because that's such a part of the English heritage. So we just said, let's make it really brassy, and we'll add a, you know, we'll add a few changes, but you don't want to change it too much, because then it no longer is what it is. So, you know, it really is dependent on the band that you're going to have, and then we try to work within the context of that.
Do you yourself play a lot of video games, and like, what was your experience with video games before jumping into this industry?
I'm the world's worst gamer, you know. If I had to play Uncharted, I would be on level one forever, you know. So actually, what they do, everybody I'm surrounded by is so good that I literally go down to Naughty Dog and they just play through it for me and show me what we're doing and guide me through. I'd be a liar if I told you anything else. I'm just, you know, it's not an expertise of mine, and I'm intimidated because they're all so absolutely good. So,
well, it's not fair. They do play it every day, and that's their job. So,
you know what? They really do. I mean, even before they released Uncharted 3, you know, Scott Hanel, one of the Sony guys, you know, I went down there and said, how many times have you played through the whole game? And he said, oh, I don't know, about 20.
Oh, geez.
And I'm going, dude, you know. But listen, it's just, listen, one of the things that's really fun about Uncharted, it's not about me, it's not about Sony, it's not just about Amy. It really is a team effort. Mm-hmm. And it just is so fun working with a team of people who are all highly talented, who all care desperately that they make something really special and work really, really hard to do so, and they will stop at nothing to make it great for the gamer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm just part of the team.
Yeah.
And honored to be such.
Well, and it's nice that it's also pretty cinematic, so you can just sit there and watch someone play, and it'd actually be pretty involved and engaging, so you don't technically have to be behind the controls.
It is. It's kind of fun for me. You know, they actually fight over the controls. You know, they go, listen, if you die, I get to play the game, you know. But watching them play, you're absolutely right. It is cinematic, and you know, and they structure it so that every time you do the same thing, you don't necessarily hear the same piece of music. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, if you were to play through a level that's difficult and die, when you come back to go over some of the same territory that you've already covered, they want a different piece of music there, so it's not exactly the same as it was before. So even when you fail, you sometimes succeed because now the game is different.
Ah. And then, so what inspires you when you work? Like, whether it's working on video games or another medium?
Sometimes it's the visual. Sometimes it's the story. Sometimes it's the acting performance. You really can't, it's hard to put your finger on it in a general sense, because it can be any of those things. I must say the actors have really been inspirational in the Uncharted series, because even if the graphics aren't done and the visuals aren't done, you still have their performances. And they're really good actors, and they just make it fun. So I would have to say that they're a big, big part of that for me. But Amy is inspirational. Amy tells you the story, and, you know, that's inspirational. Jonathan is inspirational. Plus, just the fun of getting to write music. I mean, what I get to do for a living is so fun. And to have those kind of resources, you are so lucky to have an orchestra that's going to ultimately play this music, and you're going to get to hear it played really well. Or even the instruments, you know, like when we bring in Chris Bleth to do the ethnic woodwinds, or Craig Stoll to play all the ethnic stringed instruments. Those things are inspirational, too. You're really getting to work with wonderful musicians in a world-class facility, surrounded by just, you know, the best of the best, and the players are the best in the world. So, I mean, it's not hard to find inspiration there.
It must be amazing to kind of hear your work come to life in like a live setting, because it's always different when you write it down on notes, I imagine.
Yes, it's very different. Really good players breathe something into the music that you just never could have. I mean, you know that it's going to be different from your, we always have to do demos so that we know what we're doing. And we do those primarily with synths. And, synthesizers are great for some things, but they're not even close to what a real orchestra can do. So when they breathe life into it, you just go, how lucky am I? How thrilled and how lucky am I to be here? And somebody's paying for this, and we're getting to do this, and it's going to end up in the game. I mean, it's just thrilling.
And so how has video game music evolved in the last few years, like as you've been working in the industry, and where do you kind of see it heading into the future?
When I first started on Uncharted 1, of course, it was my first game. We talked and they kind of said, we want to be careful when you're doing gameplay. We want to be careful of too much melodic content, because if we're going to have to loop it, let's say the player, for whatever reason, decides to stay in a level longer than anticipated. They said, if we have to loop it, it's going to become really irritating if the same melody comes around every 8 bars. And ultimately the player is going to turn the music down or turn it off completely. And so we don't want that. So it was much more of an ambient score, more elongated, and it had little ethnic flutes and little things like that that were color, but we tried to stay away from too much melodic content. When we got to Uncharted 2, not only had the game engine changed, and it was much more sophisticated, so they didn't have to loop in the same way that they did on the first one. Mm-hmm. Also, I was just ready to write music that felt like it had more melodic content anyway. So I said, let me just write, and if I'm doing something that's not going to work or something we need to rethink, let me know, and I will, and we'll rethink it. And they were very encouraging and just said, just write something that you think is interesting and good, and we'll find a place to put it, and we'll make it work, and if somehow we veer off track, we'll let you know, and we'll stop, and we'll change course. So Uncharted 2 was a much more melodic score. There was a lot more going on in the middle of gameplay. By the time we got to this one, we decided to stay the same course. The game engine is becoming even more sophisticated. So this one they were able to do in quads. So, if you play it in with a 5.1 system, you're surrounded by the music. It just is changing all the way down the line. You see the whole, one thing that's really wacky to me about the video game industry is that it changes so quickly and in a short period of time. And an analogy might be this. Films have been around for a long time, and we know how to make them. You shoot it, and you do post-production, and you're done. Television, same thing. And really, it's kind of the same process, just accomplished over a much shorter period of time. Video games are changing, and I don't know where the future goes. As they change, the future is unknown. I think it's a completely exciting format, because we just don't know where it's going. The way they now do Uncharted, they've always done it via mocap, which stands for motion capture, where they wear the little suits with the balls and shoot them with cameras so that they can actually copy the physical motion. They're not anticipating what it is. They're actually filming it and then animating it so that it looks real, as though a human would do it.
Right.
Now they also capture the vocal performances. They actually have a sound man actually capturing the performances. So if the actor is running and jumping, the sound man is running with him and capturing his sound as he delivers his dialogue, running and jumping. And therefore it sounds real, because it is real. It's the exact way it would sound if you were really doing it, because they are really doing it. So as it becomes more sophisticated, here's what they're starting to get in performances that really is tricky and has been elusive. They're starting to get emotion. Mm-hmm. And emotion makes things so interesting. And once you start to capture that, you go, where could this all go? I don't know. But it's a new type of storytelling, and a new type of storytelling that, pardon the pun, is uncharted. Because we don't know.
Yeah.
The sky's the limit. We'll just have to kind of be along for the ride and see where it all goes.
And would you like to continue in video games?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm thrilled being here. You know, now I got to say, I've been really lucky, you know, mm-hmm. for the past few projects. I mean, between Firefly and Uncharted, I mean, how lucky to land on projects like that. Yeah, but I would love to continue. It's really an exciting place to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the people, you know, my experiences have just been nothing but positive. And okay. and I've had a wonderful time. And again, you have resources that you're thrilled to have. And I would let you know, I think the video game industry is just really a creative industry right now. And I would love to stay involved. So I hope I can.
Oh, awesome. So what other career path would you be interested in trying if you weren't a composer?
I'm not sure what you mean by that, because this is about all I know how to do at this point.
Well,
McDonald's
just say...
might be a possibility.
Well, if you had any choice, like if you weren't a composer and you just had a chance to do anything that you wanted to do, like is there any other career that you would like to explore? Like you don't necessarily need to have the skills, just something that you'd be interested in.
I think being a film director would be wonderful. Mm-hmm. I love the idea of storytelling, and it's what I try to do in my music. Although in the music, you don't really want to tell a story. You don't want to lead them by the nose. You just want to be part of the fabric of interesting stories. And I'll tell you what makes interesting storytelling for me. And I'm going to harken back to Firefly here on this, if you don't mind. When people say something, but they don't mean what they say, becomes so interesting. And I'll give you an example. There was a story, I don't even remember the episode, but there was a place where Mal was introducing people to the crew on the ship. And as we know, Inara was a sanctioned prostitute in that time and place. But Mal always loved her. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Here's our whore." But that's not what he meant. Yeah. What he meant is, I so desperately love her.
Yeah.
I wish she wasn't doing this. It's a little bit like, remember the old story of the kid who likes the girl sitting in front of him in elementary school. So
he's just mean to her.
Dips her hair in the ink well or something. He just doesn't know how to. He doesn't know how to be vulnerable. He doesn't know how to say I love you. He doesn't know how to say I care so much that I wish you weren't doing this. Those things make it so interesting. That's such a compelling part of storytelling.
Yeah.
And it requires great acting, and it requires a great script and somebody who knows how to capture it. And those things are so fun, and it's so fun to be a part of that musically, where maybe you can show the wheels turning a little bit, mm-hmm. especially when people aren't talking. When, you know, a man looks at a woman and he goes, "I always love you, didn't you? I always loved you, didn't you know?" And nobody says anything. Music gets to be a part of that. So if I wasn't doing music, I would love to be storytelling on the other end of that.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you never know. You still could.
Yeah. I think it'll have to be directing. It won't be acting. I can tell you, I have so little of those skills. You know, I so admire actors, and it's such a boy. Is that hard? You know, that's a tricky one, and they just make it look easy, but it is not easy. So,
oh yeah, it takes a lot of work.
It really does.
So what's next for you? Can you reveal any projects that you're working on?
There are a couple of things that we're not supposed to talk about, and we'll just kind of have to see. But I will be really honest with you. I am terribly excited to see what the future holds. Mm-hmm. And I'm not completely clear on what it is. I'm really not. I would be I just love working. I would be happy to do a video game that's like Uncharted, a big one with a big budget. I would be happy to do a video game that was Angry Birds. Because I think one of the fun things about games is they don't all need to be the same.
No, they don't.
You can have big ones. You can have small ones. I did a little film last year that'll come out this year called Montana Amazon. Haley Joel Osment, Olympia Dukakis. So one of the fun things about it was a small, quirky score. And after coming off of Uncharted, 2, which was a big score, it's really fun to do different things. They all have a unique charm. And you kind of go, oh, I forgot how fun this was. So it's just fun to do those things. I worked on a TV show for a long time, 12 years, called King of the Hill. Mm-hmm. And I actually miss that show. I really do. I miss it because every whenever you were doing an episode, there were three of us who did them. It was always fun to go to a recording studio and just see all your wonderful friends, who play in orchestras in Los Angeles. So everything that you do has a charm to it and has some. It brings something to the table that just makes it really fun. So not knowing exactly what the future holds, I am excited to see, because whatever it is, it's going to be something really interesting.
Well, sounds wonderful. Thank you so much for taking the time to share it with us.
Oh, thank you so much for asking.
And that brings us to the end of our show. Thank you all for listening. We do have a PlayStation Network code of the entire Uncharted 3 Drake's Deception soundtrack to give away, so be sure to go to GamesRadar to see how you can win. And if you're on Twitter, follow us at @GR_SoundRadar for updates and a chance to win some cool prizes. We have a bunch of composers lined up to talk to, so be sure to stay tuned for the next episode of Sound Radar.